Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. It's been a long week, hasn't it? I don't know if the days are longer or we've just been in the house so much that each moment just ticks by so slowly. Well, I wanted to thank you for being an essential worker, if you are. I want to thank you for staying home, if that's what you have to do as well. But I thought about doing this segment about living at home with your abuser because many of us are hunkered down. We can't leave. And sometimes our abuser takes advantage of this time. So if you're dealing with any type of sexual abuse, just check out this website. It's called bravestep.org, B-R-A-V-E, step, S-T-E-P, .org. And if no one has believed your story thus far, this is a really nice, warm, fuzzy nonprofit that believes your story. Well, we got a therapist we're going to talk to this morning about being in the house with your abuser. Our therapist this morning, his name is Ray Ball. He is the director of Providence Counseling. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Francine.
I'm so glad you can join us. 22 years you've been doing this.
Yes, 22 years. And we're grateful for what you do, Francine, to mental health in North Carolina. So I'm glad to be with you this morning.
Well, thank you. You have to tell our audience, where is that accent from?
Well, I'm a refugee from Australia. Currently sheltering in place in North Carolina. Married to Bentley Ball. We met in college. We moved here 17 years ago. I'm almost a local.
You drank the water. You're going to be here for a minute. You know, I have a girl crush on your wife. I love Miss Bentley. And say hey to Miss Bentley for me, too.
She's the best.
She is the best. So let's get down to it. Some of us are home with our abuser. So I'll start there and I'll let you take it over.
The situation is just a perfect storm, Francine. I mean, it's putting pressure on the very best of relationships. We're loss of income. We've got our kids home from school. We're disconnected from most of our social networks, the school, communities of faith, neighbors, family. There's a lot of uncertainty about how long this will go on. Lots of confusing messaging. You know, we're told that things are getting better at the same time that we have the highest death toll of today. It's a lot of anxiety. A lot of pressure, and I think we all feel it. There has been domestic violence in your relationship previously. This kind of pressure will certainly probably lead to that happening again, and it's important that we're not naive and that we're prepared and we have a plan.
You know, I wish every victim could put a sign outside their door saying, "I live with an abuser." But that wouldn't be good for the neighborhood, would it?
Well, it also is the problem. What the victim of abuse needs to do in order to manage the situation is going to provoke the abuser. So, you know, putting a sign in the yard that says an abuser lives here is going to activate the abuser, going to antagonize. Managing the abuser runs the risk of provoking the abuser. And so that is the bind that most victims find themselves in living with an abuser.
So it sounds like we're talking more so of the husband and wife, the boyfriend and girlfriend. What if the mom or dad is abusive to the child?
And you're right to highlight that. That's a very difficult place when the child is dependent on the parent and they're alone and having with the parent. The picture that I had in mind was when there's two parents in the home and one of them is abusive, and that can involve elder abuse as well. I think the solution, again, is counterintuitive because the tendency is to want to keep it all a secret. And it's really, really important if you're sheltering at home with an abuser that you do almost put a sign in the yard that says abuser lives here. You need to let as many people know as you can that you might need assistance. You want to involve as many family, friends, and neighbors that you can trust and tell them that you might need assistance if your partner struggles to self-regulate their emotions. This is what I call a necessary betrayal, right? Like, and it feels counterintuitive to go outside of the relationship with the problems in the relationship. Everything we're taught is, you know, you deal with the stuff home, if you are unsafe, it's really, really important that you, your job is to be safe, and you want to let your children know that their job is to be safe too. Their job is not to intervene with mom and dad. Their job is not to mediate for mom and dad. Their job is to be safe.
If you're just not tuning in, we've got a therapist this morning. I'm calling him our in-house, unofficial, but certified therapist. It's Ray Ball. He is with Providence Counseling. He is the director over there. And we're talking about living with your abuser as we're sheltering down in our homes. You know, it looks like nobody's home when you walk up your neighborhood because everybody's in there, but you never know what's going on. I didn't even think, Ray, of elder abuse. Right?
The people who are dependent, people who misuse power of the people who are dependent on them, that is what constitutes abuse. If an elderly person is being exploited, they can be exploited financially. Some people can work out their unfinished business from childhood on their dependent parents. And I would want to say again that the counterintuitive solution is to let people know what's going on.
But Ray, your professional opinion about this one scenario is mom has boyfriend living with her. She has some kids and they're being sexually abused as they shelter at home. And sometimes moms are a little blind to what's going on. Even when you tell mom, what do you say to that situation?
It is a very dark situation, and it is one that happens. If a child is not believed by her parents, that compounds the abuse terribly. If that child is able to reach out to someone who can find some adult in their world that will believe what's going on, that is really the only answer. And, you know, mercifully, hopefully, you would think that would be the child's parent. And the child would believe, or the parent would believe the child. And unfortunately, that isn't always the case. I would want to say something about having a plan. You want to make a plan ahead of time, because if you're in a domestic violence situation, it has a pattern to it. You've been through this before. You know when the train is going to leave the station. You know when your partner begins to, I call it, harump around the house, starts rattling the pots and pans. You realize that if you come up with a plan with your children, you're going to have some signal for them to leave the house. And this is all outlined in the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and we can give those numbers in a minute. But you want to have some signal for your children. They know and you know ahead of time that the situation is escalating, and their job is to be safe. You want to have somewhere for them to go, whether it's to a neighbor's house, to a family's house, or a local park, just to get out of the house where you can come and get them later. I encourage my clients not to demonize their partners when they're setting up this plan, because kids are incredibly loyal, and they're loyal to both parents. You know, you can count it in terms of mom or dad, the person who's not able to deal with the situation at the moment. They're not able to care for themselves, so they're not caring for us. And so your job is to feel safe. Encourage the children to know that this is how they're loving mom and dad well, if they're taking care of themselves and they're giving mom and dad an opportunity to talk through it without them. So your first job is to try and get the kids out of the house, and then you need to have a place within the home that you can retreat to, and preferably it's a place that you can barricade if you feel that much under threat. And you also want to have a place that you can escape from. You don't want to barricade yourself in somewhere where you're stuck, but in a bedroom or a bathroom that you maybe just get out of the window. And again, you're preparing. You've got the car faced the right way out of the driveway, and you have it fueled up, and you have places for you to go. Another recommendation I make for my clients is to have a signal for neighbors or family members. So if you turn a particular light on in the house, or if you hang a sheet in the window, that perhaps they could come over and give you a reason to leave the house. If your safe place is breached, you want to make yourself as small a target as possible. And this all sounds very heavy, But unfortunately, for those who are sheltering at home with their abuser, they know some of which I'm speaking. You want to have a plan for your own exit from the house. And again, I recommend rehearsing it with your children. See if you can climb out through the window. You might think you can, and when push comes to shove, you might realize it's too high off the ground, or you don't quite fit through the window the way you thought you did. So preparation, do not be naive. If there has been domestic violence in your house before, under this kind of pressure, in this situation, with this pandemic, it will occur again.
Wow, that was great advice. Great tips. If someone's listening now and they can totally 100% relate to what you just said, what is a hotline number that they could call?
Well, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. That is 24 hours a day, and they can talk you through a situation. I would encourage people to keep their phones by them at all times. And if your children are old enough to have phones, being able to get out of the house and call a neighbor or call a family member is really helpful.
He's been in this business for 22 years, so we trust your advice. Right now, all of us are hunkered down and sheltered in the house, but some of us are with our abuser, and that can be for elder abuse. So Ray Ball's been joining us this morning. We want to thank him and his wife, Bentley, for always doing great things in the community. Thank you.
My pleasure, Francine. It's good to be with you. And once again, thank you for what you do. We appreciate you.
Aw, thank you, Ray. Well, if you listening now want to know more about Brave Step, log on to bravestep.org to find out more about this nonprofit right in Charlotte, North Carolina. Brave Step empowers individuals who have been impacted by sexual abuse, and they want to shape a strong, supportive community around you. Bravestep.org.
You're listening to the Francine Marie Show. We're popping out for a quick cup of tea, but we'll be right back.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council. A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. With COVID-19 in the air, a lot of us are finding out a little bit more about ourselves because we're spending more time with ourselves and our families. So, are you still going to work? Do you need to go to work? Have you lost your job? There's so much. We've got somebody I need to introduce you to. It's Kathy Carson. She's a Healing Touch certified practitioner. Some folks call her a certified holistic nurse. Good morning.
Good morning, Francine. As a holistic nurse, I know that we like to talk about healing and wellness and balance. And so those are some of the terminologies that we focus on as a holistic nurse.
As long as I've known you, you were a holistic nurse before that term came about.
So I've actually been a nurse for 37 years, like, wow. And 18 of that is an emergency nurse. But I think all of my nursing career, I've always been a holistic nurse. I think that's actually the reason why I am a nurse, is caring and compassion. That may be me as the eldest daughter of a family of five. So I've always been that person who's been the caregiver, whether it's been for animals or younger siblings. So, yeah, I've always been the holistic nurse. people have a self-awareness of when they're under stress, what their maybe less unhealthy habits are. And rather than beating ourselves up for that, just being mindful of that, that that's our go-to default when we feel stressed. Maybe it's spending more time with our animals and brushing the dog and cuddling with them or going outside and playing. So mindfulness is exactly that, is being present in this very moment so that we're not allowing ourselves to drift back into what happened yesterday on the news, something that you may have experienced, a story that you may have heard, something that moving forward and thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen tomorrow? Are things getting worse? Allowing ourselves to be fully present in this moment. So whether that's being with nature, coloring, a mandala, journaling, reading something that's spiritually nourishing, just sitting in nature and listening to the birds, whatever nourishes your spirit, and giving yourself permission to be completely present in that moment. Those are the things that will nourish our body physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, and filling our cup up, creating resilience. So for when things do come our way, that we aren't so depleted. We already have filled our cup and our body's immune system is far stronger to be protected.
I'm glad you mentioned the immune system because that's what it's really all about, right?
Yeah. So the immune system, we all know, is going to be depleted by our physical, emotional, mental, spiritual stress. And here's the thing. This is a stressful time. And it's okay to acknowledge that. It's okay and accept the fact that we are going to feel more stressed. So not denying it is a reality and is the first step. Realizing that we're all experiencing that. And then recognizing, how am I feeling? Am I feeling emotionally stressed? Okay, what can I do about that? Who is that person in my world that can listen to me and not judge and just be present and help me fill my cup? But also remember that we have to be mindful to not focus on just the negative things, that we have to figure out what are some of the things that I know that I can do to nourish my emotional wellness. Maybe I'm grateful. When I was driving home on Friday, I was smiling as I saw a house with a mom and a child outside playing basketball. And I thought, in all the times I've driven on the street, I've never seen them outside. So I was grateful for the opportunity for that family to be together and come together as a unit and be outside, her playing with this child and that child having the opportunity to play basketball with her mom. So seeing the positive things that are happening throughout all of this and not focusing on all the things that are negative.
If you're just not tuning in, that's the voice of Kathy Carson. She is our certified holistic nurse. She is a Healing Touch certified practitioner. That's how I first met Kathy. So self-care in this time as we're sitting at home, I loved how you just eloquently explained how we're just supposed to be still and enjoy and be grateful.
And so even myself personally, as a certified holistic nurse, one of our roles is to obviously take care of ourselves, to mentor that behavior, but also to coach and to teach and nourish other people in that very thing. So those are the things that I'm trying to do. The other day at work, one of the teammates, we had finished lunch, I said, hey, it's gorgeous outside. Would you please join me outside on a walk so we can get some fresh air and really connect with nature? And she did. And as we're coming back in, her words were, oh, I want to continue this practice even when we're done with this because I feel so good that I've just been outside during this 12-hour shift and I'm really thankful that you asked me to come outside and join you. Those very subtle little things that every person that we can mentor and help grow to help connect the dots during this time and helping them recognize how they feel once they've had an opportunity to experience self-care and reminding them how important that is during this time to create resilience. But the thing that I love to explain, Francine, too, is that each of us is a pebble in the pond. So if my energy is high and intense and stressed, then I'm bringing that to all those around me. But if my energy is calm and balanced, then I not only affect and heal myself, but I'm able to impact all those in my immediate surroundings and any of the patients and family and teammates that I'm coming upon. So I have found myself, even before COVID kicked in, just being mindfully aware of telling my teammates as I travel in my workspace, thank you for being here today. I appreciate you. Thank you for being here today, caring for our patients and our family. And I get this double take and it's like, what? Mm-hmm. I said, I know. We don't tell that to each other often enough. And I'm sincere when I tell you that. And just being more having compassionate conversations. There's a beautiful book that I'm reading right now that was gifted to me called Compassionomics, Revolutionary Scientific Evidence that Caring Makes a Difference. Even now, more than ever, because patients aren't allowed to have their families and friends in with them during this time of crisis. And when people are sick, they're scared. So we as healthcare providers need to be even more present and more compassionate with our patients because we're it. We are their family right now. So, but it has to start with ourselves. We have to have the self-care, which part of that is compassion for ourselves, for our teammates, and then extending that compassionate conversation and caring. One of the physicians says, if we're not compassionate in our healthcare, we are practicing malpractice. Healthcare is not just about giving an IV medication or doing an assessment. It's doing with presence and being compassionate with that patient. And as a holistic nurse, when I speak with students, I always tell them, if you want to continue loving your job and what you do, whether it's a respiratory therapist, a physician, or a nurse, after 37 years, be present with your patient, because what happens there, it allows us to make connections at a heart and spiritual level. And sure, your patient and your families are going to benefit, but the person that wins the most is you. Because when you went into healthcare, you went into that profession because you do care. And if you default to a pattern of just doing tasks at the end of your day, that's what you've experienced, and you do not go home nourished. But when you connect with people at a heart level, which is who our nurse theorist talks about, compassionate moments and caring moments, that both you and your patients and family have changed. You've connected. And that's what nourishes the profession, those caring, compassionate moments. And that's why I still love what I do after 37 years, because I've learned the importance of being present, of caring, and being compassionate in that very moment with that patient. It's powerful. And that's what, throughout all of this, through the fear and the stress, going in those rooms in full isolation, because the patients can't see us, we're garbed up in so much protective gear, if that's the environment that you're working in. But your eyes can still smile, that they can feel your compassionate presence through the energy. So as a certified, the Healing Touch certified practitioner, we extend healing compassion through our presence and our energy. And that's what patients feel. Whether they're conscious or unconscious, they will know that you are compassionately present. Or are you just going in the room doing a task? And if we're involved in ourselves in so much fear and anxiety, that's not healthy for ourselves, let alone for our patients and our families. And compassion is necessary for healing. So if that patient on a ventilator who has pneumonia in both of their lungs and is sedated chemically, they can still experience the loving compassion of that caring team. And that's what will help heal them.
Well, I like the lesson that you're teaching us this morning. And I enjoy that you're giving us the stories that are coming from hospitals and patients. And
I think so many people are afraid, but here's what we have to, when we look at the science and the trend of COVID, I don't want to speak as an infectious disease professional, but as a nurse, the patients that are doing well, and most patients are healthy and strong, all the more reason for all of us to maintain a healthy self-care and take care of our families, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. Don't be on social media 24/7. Have scheduled time that you're doing that, making sure that your family and your children and your significant others are doing the same thing. It's gorgeous out today. The sun's shining. The spring is here and the flowers are blooming. And I guess if you don't have allergies, it's not, maybe it's not your friend. But be with nature if that's a healthy environment for you today to fill your cup up and create resilience. But really taking care of ourselves and our family and our neighbors who are also fearful. We're planning on a social distance get together with two other people tonight in our driveway because that family needs those human connections. Whether you're connecting on social media, doing live streaming with your family.
There's a lot of virtual happy hours going on, and I'm glad because they're being more creative.
I love it. I love it.
I'm glad your spirits are high. I think you were just born like that, being holistic as you are as a nurse, certified. Oh, we got to say certified holistic nurse. Kathy Carson's been joining us this morning. What can we do for medical staff? I know that we can't be around physicians and nurses and folks in the hospital, but what can we do? Stop buying up all the toilet paper, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Right. Just share that. I think that it's important that if you have a healthcare provider in your home and in your family, that give them an opportunity to express in a healthy way what's going on in their world. They have to feel safe in doing that. But I think it's also important, Dr. Wayne Sotile talked about resilience, encourages healthcare providers to be at work and be present at work. And when you're at home, be present with your family at home. And that doesn't mean that you don't have an opportunity to share a little bit with what's going on without breaching any patient confidentiality, but then to encourage that person and nourish their family life. So have a safe environment and support them and help engage them in their self-care. Again, I think tapping into what resources you have, if nourishing the spirit is watching comedies at home with popcorn, by golly, get some of those comedies out and being super mindful of what things you're doing as a family. Some groups of people, different churches have sent cards and having one person drop them off. So we're still practicing safe social distance, walked into the locker room on Friday morning and a card at each of our lockers from these children encouraging and telling healthcare providers, thank you for what they're doing, caring for their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents. And that was amazing. We're being fed, and I'm afraid we're all going to get fat. The local restaurants are sending food. So encouraging your family to set healthy boundaries with social media and creating healthy practices at home. And there's so many great apps out there that are free, calm, headspace. Beautiful music. If somebody is spiritual, I appreciate you checking in with us and caring for all the healthcare providers and sharing our stories.
Kathy Carson is our certified holistic nurse, Healing Touch certified practitioner. She's everything with a big old heart in the middle. Thank you.
Thank you. Have an awesome day.
It's the Francine Marie Show. We're taking a break. So before you can wipe your bum, we'll be right back.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance so common with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Your daughter doesn't want to talk about why her room is a horrible mess. Your son doesn't want to talk about why he's wearing mismatching socks. Your spouse doesn't want to talk about their bad haircut. Families don't have to talk about everything, but they should talk to plan for an emergency. Pack basic supplies in a go bag, water, canned food, flashlights, batteries, medical supplies, IDs, and some cash. Talk about where you'll meet in case you lose one another. And of course, don't forget to pack the dog treats. Talk to your family and make an emergency plan. Go to nyc.gov/readyny or call 311 to make your family's emergency plan. Brought to you by New York City Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening, smarty pants.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Are you feeling appreciated right now? Do you feel a little sad? Are you angry? Do you feel like you have choices? Do you feel like you have control over your entire life? Well, we all have different answers for that right now. And we have the author of Reset Your Buttons. We thought Reset Your Buttons was a perfect topic. It's a great book. And the author is Mary Elizabeth Murphy. Good morning.
Good morning, Francine. Thank you so much for having me back and the opportunity to contribute during this time.
Our listeners can go to resetyourbuttons.com, and buttons has an S. What year did you write this book?
Wrote the book in 2009, so we were actually coming out of the Great Recession at that time. But it took 7 years to write it. So 7 years went into writing it, and we've now been using it in the world for going on 11 years now, I guess. We've opened up the phone lines, and we're doing more community calls for people who want to learn the reset model and learn how to apply it in their homes and in their lives right now with this constant state of flux. RESET stands for the acronym Recognize, Expectations, Sense of Self, Emphasize Core Values, and Take Stock. So on a day-to-day basis, a button could get pushed. We shift between our feelings, right? So the buttons that are getting pushed right now are things like, I have no control. Things keep changing. I try to make a plan and the plan changes. Values buttons are being pushed. You know, how do I keep a roof over my head? Do I order from the local restaurant to help support that business, but then am I risking bringing germs into my home? Do I go to the grocery store? Do I not go to the grocery store? It's a constant chain of questioning, what should I be doing or not doing? And I just use that word should. There's that feeling of somehow I should know, right? And in the book, I talk about and continue to talk about that you shouldn't know. Why should you know? And what I said was, you've never lived this moment before. So even though you have a lot of life experience, you have a lot of wisdom, you know a lot of things, there are things that you do know. So put your attention there. What do I know? What am I certain of? What can I control in this moment? And then let go of the should, because no one before in time, that, or at least in our lifetime, has lived through a situation like this. No one. And we also haven't lived through the very next moment of the situation like this, which we know is constantly changing. So the exhale needs to be, when you hear yourself saying, I should know, or I should have known, or why, you know, I should have known to buy more toilet paper. Really? Why should you have known that? Don't do the beat up on yourself. Take care of what you can take care of right now. Focus on what you do know and what you are feeling right now. Being in the moment is critical right now. So when you feel a button pushed, so again, back to recognize. Recognize first that a button's been pushed. Pause and ask yourself, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What do I want? And when you take yourself through those three questions, you then can take yourself to the place of once you get to what do I want, that can be a little tricky, right? Because what do I want might be, well, I want to be able to go outside and get in my car and go to the grocery store and go to the park and do all these things. And the conversation right now is, what do I want that I can do? Not what I can't do, but what can I do? So acknowledge, even if you come to what do I want and I can't have what I want, acknowledge that. Acknowledge those feelings. Allow the disappointment, right? So that goes back to expectations. So if you're feeling disappointed, be disappointed. And then come back to, okay, now what can I do? I can't go to the movies, but I can watch something on TV or my phone or thankfully the computer right now. I can read a book. I can have a conversation with someone. I can work on a crossword puzzle or a jigsaw puzzle or play a game. So moving from away from what you can't do to what you can do also reinforces your own feeling of control. You can control the moment. You can control yourself in the moment. And even if controlling yourself in the moment means sitting down and having a good cry, that would be a normal thing to do right now.
Thanks for giving us permission.
Right. So I might be feeling joyful, or I might have a mood of sadness. I might be feeling anxiety or low level anxiety, right? Recognize, my mood right now is blue, or my mood right now is sadness, or my mood right now is hopeful. My mood right now could be inspired. But if the key to it is recognize the feeling, acknowledge that you're feeling something, and then explore that feeling. What's that feeling that I'm feeling? And sometimes we have to talk it out. Sometimes we don't know what we're feeling. So picking up the phone, getting on Zoom, talking to someone in the house with you if you can, and just say, I just need to kind of talk through a little bit and see if you can hear what I'm feeling. And that's a really cool way to listen as well. If you are listening to someone who's talking and you are filtering and listening specifically for what does that person sound like they're feeling. And again, we don't make up the story. I can't say, Francine, you're feeling and tell you what you're feeling, but I could certainly ask you. Or I could say, it sounds to me like you might be feeling this way. It sounds to me like you might be feeling frustrated. And you'll know, the person will know, because you'll be like, yes. And you've had those conversations with people, right? Where they go, yes, that is what I'm feeling. Okay. Right? So yeah. Now that you've identified the feeling, now you can take it again to that, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What do I want? Because then you can get underneath it a little bit and be like, well, okay, if you're feeling frustrated, let's take a look at what you might be frustrated about. Children are there and you're homeschooling, and or if you've got, extended family living with you. Or again, even if you're alone, you could begin to write it out as well. If you don't feel like calling someone and talking with them. And the key to it is the focus is on self, not blaming, right? So this is where it could get tricky when it's like, well, I'm feeling frustrated because you don't, right? Now we're into blame. So I'm feeling frustrated. Keep the focus on self. And it doesn't mean that someone else's actions, especially when we're living together for the most part 24/7, isn't going to cause frustration. But it could be, I'm feeling frustrated because of the way you load the dishwasher. What can we do about that? How could we do it differently? Or I'm feeling frustrated because the dishwasher gets loaded this way. Be a little bit trickier waters, but if you keep recognizing that the button's being pushed, if you keep recognizing and asking yourself and the person you're talking with, what are you thinking, what are you feeling, what do you want, and allowing, I feel like I keep banging the drum, but it's so important, especially right now, allowing and acknowledging the feeling. If I could add one more piece into that, Francine, as well, is it's also a really good time to, reset is about create relationships that work. So we're talking primarily today about the relationship with self and relationship with other humans it's also a time to think about, okay, how do I reset? You know, money is a big deal right now. We're fighting two fronts, right? Our health and our finances. Mm. And so these are the same kind of questions you could be asking yourself when you're looking at your finances or when you're looking at your health. What do I recognize that I'm feeling right now? Like, get up and move. If you don't want to be outside, walk around the inside of your house. Walk up and downstairs. Stand in place and take steps. You know, recognize how you're feeling and set some realistic expectations for yourself around your health right now. It's a great time to look at your relationship with money. How does that need to change, or what can stay the same? The model, recognize expectations, sense of self, examine core values, and take stock, can apply to all of your relationships. So as you mentioned, it's we are home. We do have some time to slow down and look at things. I know there's people that are working from home. They're like, I don't ever want to work from home again. I thought I did, but now I don't, right? So, and then there's others who are like, hey, this working at home thing isn't so bad. So use the model. Recognize the button, look at your expectations, consider your sense of self, what are your values, and then take stock on it all in all of your relationships. That's my best advice for now.
In the book, do you have room for exercises that we can do?
There are exercises. There's one in particular around values. Identify your values. And there's a couple of other exercises. There's a lot of questions that I have in there to think about, talk with yourself. We do have 52 Reset Mindset. It's a weekly email that people receive, and then it takes them to our micro course. And we're doing free community calls on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock for anybody who wants to join the community call. The community calls are free on Thursday nights, and you can sign up on the website for the free community calls. There's also some free podcasts on there, too, that talk about how to reset your buttons, that people can get that resource. And then, you know, we used to do a First Friday in-person lunch. You know, we're not doing that right now. So we did a First Friday virtual lunch, and that was also free. And so in May, the first Friday in May, we'll have a virtual lunch, and that's from 11:30 to 12:30 Eastern on the first Friday of the month. Free resources on the website, and then there's free live resources that we're on.
We keep saying we need to network more. I bet we're going to start networking more now that we're not with people than when we were with people.
And it's interesting you say that because now that we can do that globally. I mean, we've always been able to, but I think that now that people are getting more comfortable with Zoom, you know, the different platforms like Zoom and Microsoft Teams and Facebook Live, stepping over those edges of, okay, I'm willing to be on video. And I'll add this. When I can see faces and the feedback I keep getting from our community, when they can see faces, it just makes such a difference. And so it's great to be able to talk on the phone like we are now. But when we can see each other's faces, it's so comforting. So I encourage, even if you feel uncomfortable, do it anyway.
ResetYourButtons.com. ResetYourButtons.com. Mary Elizabeth Murphy, the author, and she teaches us how to take back our power, our choices, and ultimately our lives.
Thank you Francine. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to share the message to help people.
Yes, and say hey to the Reset community.
I will. We love when you join the calls and when you come to the luncheons. You raise our vibrations and you raise our energy. And just hearing your voice when you called in a few weeks ago, it was just like I could feel the whole group just lift because you bring such sunshine. You bring that. It's okay feeling. So thank you for doing that for the whole community and bringing the information you bring to everybody, and especially at this time. I know you're out there working really hard to find what do we need to have right now to get through.
Thank you for sharing. I appreciate you so much. All right, Mary Elizabeth Murphy, go right now. It's ResetYourButtons.com.
You're listening to the Francine Marie Show. We're popping out for a quick cup of tea, but we'll be right back.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance will come in with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact, without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Only smart people get up early enough to listen to the Francine Marie Show. So thanks for listening. Smarty pants.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Are you one of the small business owners affected by the coronavirus, meaning that you had to lay off your employees, or you're wondering, why did you have to shut down your business? Well, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan application is open right now. We got the man. It is Thomas Stith III. He is the district director at the Small Business Administration. Good morning.
Good morning, Francine. How are you this morning?
I am so good. I am glad that you are taking interview after interview. Yesterday, I think you took maybe 25 or 35.
We have a lot of valuable information, ways to help small businesses. So we are trying to get that message out throughout the entire small business community.
And in between the time of you telling us what we need to know as small business owners, you have to have all these meetings. So you're probably having weekly meetings, daily meetings, I don't know, with a banking association.
Very frequent meetings. And you're right. We are working closely with the North Carolina Bankers Association. We work with direct lenders that are their members and maybe not their members. Obviously, we're working with small businesses across North Carolina. We have over 900,000 small businesses in North Carolina, and they employ 1.7 million people. SBA takes this very seriously. We understand the impact small businesses have on not only our economy, but our communities in general. While we're very busy now and feel that's our role and responsibility to support small businesses, even more so now during this crisis.
What's the first step? If they go to SBA.gov.
If you have been impacted by COVID-19, if you go to SBA.gov/coronavirus, and that's SBA.gov/coronavirus, that will take you directly to an information portal that lists all the various recovery opportunities that are available to small businesses. The initial response was the Economic Injury Disaster Loan. Those loans are available for general operating expenses, everything from payroll to mortgage to accounts payable. They can go up to $2 million over a 30-year period. Small businesses have a rate of 3.75%, nonprofits 2.75%. And that's a key point that nonprofits, even nonprofits organized as a faith organization, are eligible as well as small businesses. In addition to the ability to apply for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, within that loan, there's the opportunity to request an advance. It is up to $10,000 based on your business. And once approved, there is a processing time, but once approved or if approved for the advance, we get that to the small business person while their full application is being reviewed. So that's an excellent tool for small businesses to pursue. And we can talk about others as well. There's a recent legislation passed called the CARES Act. And inside of that legislation was the Paycheck Protection Program, which is probably one of the most popular items in the news these days, because that provides businesses the ability to not only take out a loan, but to have part of that loan forgiven.
We We like the word forgiven these days, right? We want our student loans forgiven. We want everything forgiven. If you're just not tuning in, we got our new best friend on the line. Yep, it is Thomas Stith III. He is the district director of the Small Business Administration, joining us this morning, giving us some insight. He's having meetings and doing interviews all the time. We didn't know that our lives were going to be like this, Thomas. All of us are just trying to work it out as we go. And as we work it out as we go, this is the early stages of a crisis. And the early stage, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, it is. I totally agree. We have not faced this type of crisis before, at least in modern history. And so it is impacting every community, every small business. And so these initiatives are designed to provide some economic support during these very challenging times.
You're not a fortune teller, but if you had to speculate, would you say that we might have to keep this practice up of forgiving some loans and giving out some money?
Our congressional leaders are reviewing that as we speak. There is discussion around increasing funding for the Paycheck Protection Program. That was the second initiative that I mentioned briefly. That's designed to help small businesses keep people employed. And that's how you get a portion of that loan, or potentially all of it, forgiven. Once you receive a Paycheck Protection Program loan, if you utilize those proceeds during the first 8 weeks after receiving the proceeds for payroll and other expenses that are allowable, or rent and utility payments, that amount of money spent on payroll, and we're asking from an SBA perspective, because of limited funds, use at least 75% for payroll, and the other 25% could be used for those other uses. That portion of the loan is forgiven, and so that reduces the amount that the small business would have to repay. And so as you talk about next steps, the economic injury disaster loan was the first step. North Carolina was declared in a disaster on March 18th in every county. And so that allowed businesses to apply for the economic injury disaster loan. Now we have the Paycheck Protection Program. And so I think as we see deliberations with the U.S. Congress, there will potentially be other support for our small businesses through economic support. You obviously can't predict what's going to happen in Washington. And so we have some very strong initiatives that we're, as you mentioned earlier, just trying to get the message out and inform citizens. But I would agree, as you alluded to in your comments just now, there will probably be more. And our role as SBA is to inform and help support people as they pursue these initiatives.
For some of us who are not business owners, please explain this to us. So 75%, should have gone to payroll. Is that normal?
That's not a normal feature of a loan. And that is the specific feature of the Paycheck Protection Program. And let's give an example. If you qualify for a $100,000 loan, after you receive the proceeds for the first 8 weeks, if you use those money, say you use $75,000 for payroll, $25,000 for utilities, rent payment, the lease payment, and that adds up to $100,000, and you spend that during the first 8 weeks after receiving the loan, that entire loan then would be forgivable. So that is not a typical feature in a loan, whether it's an SBA loan or a regular commercial loan. You said we usually have to pay it all back. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's an incentive for businesses, once receiving this loan, to utilize those funds, majority, at least 75% initially for those first 8 weeks, payroll. That not only helps the business, but clearly it helps those individuals that work for that small business. So hence the name Paycheck Protection Program. It's an initiative to try to encourage people to keep their employment.
Wow. And what if we were December 2019, we were saying to ourselves and writing down the goals, and we said, we're going to start a business in 2020, and we started it. What about the startups?
All small businesses are eligible. If you look at the economic injury disaster loan, the coverage period began on January 31st, 2020. So if you are starting a business in, this year, you would be eligible for that. The Paycheck Protection Program, the effective date started, it goes back to February the 15th. While these initial programs are not specifically designed for startup concerns, they still, depending on when they started, would have eligibility to participate. Of course, SBA has existing loan programs that do support startups. Our 7A program, which is designed for general operating expenses, is a 504 that typically goes to machinery equipment or capital purchases in general. So SBA does, while these are through our lending partners, they do have existing products that can help small businesses in general.
That's great. I interview a lot of and work with a lot of nonprofits in my role at Beasley Media Group as the public affairs director. So I'm glad that you mentioned nonprofits because we haven't been talking about them a lot.
Nonprofits serve a very important role in our community. Nonprofits are eligible for both the Paycheck Protection Program and Economic Entry Disaster Loan. As I mentioned, is for potential borrowers to go to the SBA website, sba.gov/coronavirus. There are some general requirements. Example, for the Paycheck Protection Program, it is designed for entities with below 500 employees. There are some exemptions based on NAICS code, and we won't get too deep in the weeds, but typical rule of thumb, 500 employees and below, that will include many nonprofits that are doing great work in our community.
That's awesome. I'm a huge fan of SCORE with the SBA. Yes. They're as friendly as you are, but they are retired executives that just want to help. Are they still calling folks and helping folks?
Oh, yes. SCORE is one of our strong resource partners. And as you just detailed, they are a cadre of retired executives that volunteer their time to provide business support services to small businesses. And that's one of SBA's resource partners. We have SCORE that work closely for us, and we support them financially. There is also the Small Business Technology Development Centers that is a resource partner of ours. They provide small business technical assistance for women business centers across the state, one here in Charlotte. So not only do you have the support from SBA during these times and difficult times, but SBA has several resource partners throughout the community that can be of assistance.
I like it. You know, it takes a village, right? We're showing that right now. It takes a village to raise a small business. If you're just not tuning in, we're joined this morning by Thomas Stith III. He is the district director at the Small Business Administration, doing all these wonderful interviews, and I thank you for that. And you keep having those meetings with the Treasury Department and all those folks and keep giving them suggestions. I do have to ask one more big question, Thomas.
Yes.
Are you hiring?
Not at the district office, but SBA in general, my understanding is, obviously because of the strong demand, there are opportunities in our call centers and in assisting with loan processing. So your listeners go to the general SBA site, sba.gov, and I would imagine there are opportunities listed there. Unfortunately, we have a fully great staff in the district office here in North Carolina, but availability comes open, we'll keep you and your listeners in mind.
Thank you so much. And you enjoy your day, and hopefully we can do some more interviews. Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity to come on, and we'll come back anytime to provide additional information. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you and you for listening. I'm your hostess, the mostest, Francine Marie. Join me next weekend, same time, same station. Until we meet, and one day we will, I want you to have a good week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for the Francine Marie Show, where we address issues concerning you and your family.
That's all for now.
See you next week.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.